And we are back, Stroh Ripe Show Podcast. I am your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. We appreciate the audience out there. Last couple of weeks been fantastic. Last week, really interesting with John Eisman, Eisman Golf Academy. If you didn't get that one, go back and take a listen or a look. Of course, you can watch the podcast on my YouTube channel at Travis Fulton Golf. All the audio platforms that are out there. And yeah, John did a great job. It was, you know, you start talking about force plates, you start talking about ground reaction forces and all that, and you can get in the weeds pretty quick. And you know, the language starts, I think, kind of going over people's heads. And I think John did a great job of just kind of peeling it back. Here's how we use it. Here is what is important. And I really enjoyed that one. So we appreciate the audience out there. Thank you for following. The numbers have been great. We're going to keep it rolling again this week with a guy that is all things short game and putting. And he joins me from Mississippi, Tim Yelverton. Thanks, man, for joining us. This has been a long time coming. We're going to try to do it last year. We couldn't, but this year we are rocking and rolling. Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, Travis. Thanks for having me.
So are you're starting like a new position today? Is that right? We were talking before we came on. There's a new gig here.
Yeah. Day one for the head coach of the golf team here at Oak Hill at West Point. So
that's awesome.
So yeah, so we're hosting our first event today at Old Waverly. It's actually a 36 hole event. So today and tomorrow, we got a 12 o'clock shotgun today, and then weather permitting, we'll have an 8 o'clock shotgun tomorrow morning. So yeah, so they've been working hard and we're looking forward to getting after it.
Well, congratulations. That's fantastic. I know you work with a lot of young players. I know you work with a lot of amateurs, and I also know you work with a lot of professionals, which we're going to look at some of their techniques. Sepp Straka, who got his third win, someone you've worked with for quite some time now on his short game, his putting. Lee Hodges, I know you work on his short game. You know, he got a win back there in 2023. Bryce Garnett, his game has really started to trend nicely. Got a win at Puerto Rico last year. You help his game. So we'll get into to some of those, but that's where you do your teaching, right? Old Waverly Golf Club there in West Point, Mississippi. How long have you been there now?
Yeah. Started in 2007. So I finished college playing in 02 and then played some mini tour golf 3, 4, and 5. And then VJ Trolio, who was, he'd been at Old Waverly since 2000. He and I, we were at Southern Miss together, and he called me and was like, hey, we're looking to hire another instructor. You got a pretty good short game. What do you think about coming to teach short game and putting? I'll teach the full swing. We'll have a team approach. And so, yeah, we did that, you know, since 2007.
Wow. When's the last full swing lesson you gave?
Oh, very few, honestly. I work with my kids. I work with some juniors.
Yeah.
Certainly not advertised. At first, I was very kind of hesitant to get into the world of just teaching putting and short game, just because, you know how many people want to hit it farther, which is understandably important. But that being said, now it's just been all putting and short game, and it's been really cool. I've really enjoyed helping players be able to score better, you know, inside that 30, 40 yard ring around the hole. So it's been fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. You were probably on the initial wave of guys that kind of spun off and really specialized, you know, in short game only. Then it became, you know, specialized in putting. Of course, you can specialize in the fitness side, the nutrition side. You know, obviously the mental aspect of the game, psychologists. It's the specialization of the sport is fantastic. And even now in greens reading, right, aim point, which I know we're going to talk about a little later in the show. And, you know, aim point's kind of under fire really right now that it's, you know, supposedly slowing people down, and they need to ban it. So we'll get to that discussion, because I know there's a little bit that we want to share on that. Before we get to these short game techniques, these five windows, as you call it, I'm actually, when we're done here, we're videoing this on a Monday. It'll air on a Thursday. I'm actually going to be heading down to TGL down in West Palm. Taking my son down there, and we're going to watch the 4 o'clock match today on ESPN in person, which will be a lot of fun. And I'm excited because, you know, I invested in kind of the indoor model a couple years ago in Florida. And I think when I first did that, people were kind of looking at me funny, like, what, why would indoor model on floor? It's, you can play golf year round down there. I'm like, I know, right. we'll get outside. We'll do our thing outside, but also indoor is part of this game and it's continuing to grow. So I'm excited to get there. Have you watched TGA at all on TV?
Yeah, I have. I've watched a few episodes and I really didn't know, I guess the first episode was pure curiosity just to see what it was going to look like. And I'm the same with you. You know, I have a putting platform indoors that I use a lot. And I'm in Mississippi where, you know, it's a 12-month season. We'll certainly have some cold days in January. But yeah, I think it's when you can put somebody in that controlled environment and measure some things and then go take them out on the grass and measure things and see maybe where there's possibly a disconnect or what might be happening, you know, indoor versus outdoor, I think is very valuable.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into this here. We're going to start with window number one, and I'm going to pop this in here. So here is, let me play this a couple times first. This is Lee Hodges. Looks like at the waste management. And for those that are watching, you're just seeing this little green side just off the green. And just kind of looks like lower trajectory and letting it run out. What's going on here with window number one, the technique?
Yeah, so I kind of have in my mind, I sort of have a five window system, one being the lowest, three being more of a stock shot, and then five ultimately being the highest shot, maybe not used quite nearly as often. But I have five pieces that I like for the players to manipulate in a good way to hit the desired window that they're looking for. You can see here with Lee, he's standing pretty close to the golf ball. So the distance to the ball is one. The club face obviously is another. The face is a little bit turned down. He's obviously, as you stand closer, the handle's going to get higher. So the lying of the club is going to be more upright. And then the width of the stance and the ball position, which you can't really see as well from the down the line view, but those are ultimately the five. So club face, ball position, distance to ball, width of stance, and then handle height. Those are the five pieces that I like for the players to change around to match whatever shot they're looking for.
You know, it's funny. Let's talk about the height of the handle first and kind of getting that elevated. Every time I think of getting the handle higher, I think of Luke Donald, you know, like just a beautiful picture of the golf ball. And I know other guys have done it, but I can remember watching Luke many, many times and that handle high and just taking it back. Very similar technique here where not a lot of wrist hinge, right? When I look at this, it looks like, and correct me if I'm wrong, as he goes back, like maybe a little fold of the trail elbow, but not a lot of, say, radial wrist hinge in the lead wrist, not a lot of wrist cock.
Yeah. When Lee and I first started working, personal for him, he would really flex his left wrist a lot. And so then the club face would turn down, and then the sweet spot would get behind him. So that was one of the big things we really worked on a lot with him, was to get some of that flex out. And like you said, with radial deviation, getting a little more hinge up for sure.
Okay.
And then also trying to make sure that we get his left hand flatter. Because he would really turn it down, and then the ball would come out real fast. And so then he would have to slow down or back up to try to get the ball to slow down and lose some energy. And then it would ultimately, that's where his contact would kind of get a little bit off. So getting a little bit flatter left wrist really is where we started, where we dove in with Lee specifically.
One of the things that I see, Tim, I think because flexion in the lead wrist seems to be so marketed that I see a lot of players now, they try to get flexion right away, you know, in the backswing. And when they do that, like very early in the backswing, their left arm kind of comes off their chest a little bit and the club head, to your point with Lee, kind of sweet spot gets kind of dipped inside a little bit. Are you seeing like, hey, I want to get the flexion early?
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. That's exactly what Lee was doing. The grip would move, like from the down the line view, the grip would move out, you know, toward the target line. The sweet spot would swing in too much behind his hands. And then the face was down. you know, which is a lot, it's not a bad position for a lot of players who have, you know, an open face swinging over the top with a seven iron. So I think a lot of things that players can do with their iron game, they might kind of overdo in the short game. Cause obviously we're not, most of the time in the short game, you know, we're not trying to create this huge smash factor. We want a slower golf ball.
Yeah. And when I look at Lee here, what I love is when it gets halfway back right there. Like it's just that when the shaft gets parallel to the ground, the shaft is like in line with the left arm or left forearm. And so much of that is because of the education of that lead wrist, like you're saying, like it stayed pretty flat. And so it's just almost like you and just kind of finished when this is it just, do you feel like the engine's kind of like a turn with the torso almost?
Yeah. I say that all the time. Yeah. Okay. I mean, look, yeah. I think it sounds like you've been in one of my lessons. Like literally I say turn.
Okay.
20 times a day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go to window number two. This is the big guy from Love Sepp. Before we get to the shot, I did a, after his first win at the Honda, and I was working for the cut and doing the show on Golf Channel. I went there and we went on course and I got to spend some time with Sepp, and I know his full swing coach, John Tillery, and he was working on some draws and this and that. I mean, and Sepp just a big man, you know, from went to Georgia, kind of soft spoken and just, you know, confident in his own way, but he didn't, you know, he just going to let his clubs do the work, right? I mean, that's just kind of who he is. He's going to let his clubs do the work, and nice man, gentle giant, and he's got three wins now, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah, Sepp's great. I actually met Sepp, or I started working with Sepp in 2019. So that was, you know, that was his rookie year on tour. He had come from, he'd come off the Korn Ferry Tour. He won in 18 out there, and then got his card, and we started working together in 19. And it's been great. It's been really cool to watch him improve and grow as a player. You know, it's just been this nice, steady growth. Every year he's gotten better. You know, when Tillery came on board in 22, he won very soon after. And then, you know, I think everybody has really gotten used to seeing his name at the top of the leaderboards, and he's done a great job.
All right, here he is, window number two. This is a little higher trajectory.
And so, and the thing is, it's like everybody's, let me say this first, everybody's three is going to be slightly different. So you're going to have some players who maybe have a weaker grip, maybe a stronger grip. Everybody's three is going to be slightly different. But the progression of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is still going to be the same. So, so, you know, we could all go out there and, you know, maybe my three launches, if you're on TrackMan or a quad, and let's say it launches at 30, well, you know, your three might launch at 27, and that's fine. Just so that we know how we can manipulate those windows the way we want to.
Go ahead. I was gonna say, what's the main difference here in two that's making that ball go up a touch higher?
Right. So you can see he's gonna be just a touch. He's gonna be just a touch farther away. He's gonna have just a little bit more loft than what we saw earlier with Lee. The handle height won't be quite as high. It's just a tweak of those five pieces. Now, obviously, Sepp is a tall guy, so you know he's gonna have a little bit different set of characteristics of somebody that's maybe, you know, 5'9", 5'10". But like I just already said, the way he uses those five pieces in the transition, moving from his lowest shots to his highest shots, are gonna still be the same way Lee would or Bryce would or anyone else.
So even if Lee was hitting this shot at two, he would back up a touch. The handle wouldn't be quite as high. Is that the main and the club face a touch more open?
Yeah, club face. I mean, club face and ball position are probably going to be the two that move the most, that change the most. I think I always tell players, you know, with club face, you get the biggest bang for your buck. That's where you're really going to change the loft that you deliver. And that's where you're really going to see the windows change. Now, there's more subtle changes to stance width or distance to the ball or lie angle, things like that. But the club face is really is where you get the bang for your buck when you're trying to manipulate windows.
All right, so just kind of recap. Here's one, very upright, not a lot of wrist hinge, face square. And then two, back up a touch, open the face a smidge at a dress, and move the ball maybe, what, half a ball, full ball forward from one?
Yeah, I like for a ball position, I like the sternum being three, so that being their stock shot. And then I always say that in the short game, you have a floating ball position. That ball position can float all around the body based on what window the player's trying to hit. I mean, it's nothing to have a ball 3 or 4 inches behind your sternum at address. And you could easily have it 3 or 4 inches in front of the sternum. Obviously, that's going to greatly change angle of attack, which I think we may talk about here in just a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you can move that golf ball all over the place when you're trying to hit different windows.
And so let's go to three, and this is Bryce Garnett. And this is what you would kind of consider your stock, or maybe let's just say your medium trajectory, right? Where two would be a low to medium and one low would mid, be low. Yeah.
That's right.
And so here's Bryce. So what are we seeing here on now number three window, higher yet?
Yeah, and so you can see here, like, if you compare, and Bryce has a slightly stronger grip, but if you look at the club face between Bryce here and then the face that Lee had earlier on the first shot, you know, considerably different loft that these two guys are delivering, and most of that set up at address. Obviously, there's a little bit in the takeaway as far as what the player's doing to the grip. Are they twisting it closed? Are they rotating it a little bit open? Bryce is a player that in his transition, he'll actually kind of shout a little bit, and he'll sort of twist the face over a little bit on the way down, where you'll have some players who might turn the face more down in transition. So I'm always trying to do what the player does naturally and be as the least invasive way to get them to hit the desired window they're looking for.
Talk about, because the face is definitely more open right here. The toe's more up, right? And talk about rotating the face more versus twisting. And you use kind of two different terms there.
Yeah. So when the players, when the player's twisting the shaft, and we're mainly moving, we're talking pronation, supination, right? I mean, it's when the forearms have that rotation, that's where I like to see the players get a lot of loft. More so than trying to move it in this plane, trying to get from moving the lead wrist into extension this way. I really like to see the players move it more here, create some loft, maintain the loft, rather than having a more square face and then trying to throw the club head past their hands to get loft. Yeah.
That's good stuff. And you can see that with Bryce here. Like, the club head works up, and then maybe it's working up, and then he has maybe a little bit of this, right? Which is not to be confused with taking on more extension.
That's right. That's
right. It's more in the entire forearm.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 I like I said, I'm kind of repeating myself, but I really like for players to twist the face open to get more loft. And there's going to be a little bit of radial hinge in there, if you will, for sure. But, create that loft in the backswing and then maintain it, because it just is so much better for the bottom of the golf swing, I think. Yeah. I think when players start trying to throw the club head past them hard, not to say that a lot of players don't do that, especially in bunkers, but the bottom can kind of get a little inconsistent.
The face at address with Bryce, they're probably a little bit more open, but kind of what's happening here as we start to transition from, and correct me if I'm wrong, from two to three, is that, two has the face a touch open, touch open ball, maybe a touch more forward. Three, okay, yes, those same components, maybe a little more, but as we work it up, and the arm swing maybe intensifies just a little bit, now the forearm's going to rotate a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
So the arm swing's kind of getting a bit bigger, going to throw it up in the air. Now, let's go to four. This is back to the big guy. So,
yeah, so you can see here. Yet. That's right. That's right. So if you look at, if you compare Sepp's first one we saw, which was medium low, and then now we look at this one, which is medium high, the fourth mm-hmm. window, you know, you can tell he's standing just a little bit further away from it. Mm-hmm. If you could see it from face on, you would see his stance is a touch wider, ball a touch more forward. But the biggest thing again is the club face. The club face, you know, a lot of people talk about spin loft. You know, so he's really increasing that top vector of the spin loft, and that's where we're going to really change what window that golf ball's coming out of.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I noticed with all these shots to this point is that the arm swing is still very connected to the turning of the torso in both directions. I kind of dabble back and forth, Tim, with some players where it's like, let's just take that shot, for example, maybe actually probably a little further shot than that. But, you know, where it's like your arms, you know, sometimes your arms, you know, would they work a little more independent of the chest versus with the chest in the backswing? You know, it's like, you know, not this full connected to the torso turn, but do you ever let the arm ride a little more independent going back or not?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like the engine to be the torso. A little, just a touch of hip turn with the pelvis. I like the torso to rotate without a doubt. The thing that I get the most nervous about is when elbows start bending a lot. Mm-hmm. The wrist hinge is, it doesn't bother me nearly as much. When elbows start bending and straightening a lot, there's some players that do it and they do it fine. Mm-hmm. But I get a little bit more nervous, especially for the guy who maybe plays golf once a week. They don't have a whole lot of time to practice and chip. This time of year, when the ground's really soft and the ball wants to sit lower to the ground, those are some dicey shots. And I like a little bit wider arc, if you will, Stricker, Jason Day, guys like that. For some reason, when people start thinking about their arms, they almost replace the elbow joint and the wrist joint in their thoughts. It's so weird. Mm-hmm. Like when they talk about bending their arm, sometimes you'll say something about a wrist joint and they actually change their elbow or vice versa. It's strange. They mm-hmm. kind of think about the arm as one piece when obviously there's multiple joints from mm-hmm. our fingertips to yeah. our shoulder. So I don't mind some wrist hinge at all. The elbows, when they start to bend a little excessively and the body doesn't turn, that's when I'm sort of throws up a red flag.
And I think one of the troubleshootings here, let's talk about some troubleshooting here for a minute with the audience, because, you know, this, you start going down this path of short game and showing this people stuff. And one of the things that happens is there, you'll see the hands at some point where, okay, they kind of move away from the body going back, which is scary. and or, you know, coming into impact, they move a little away, right? And of course, when one of those two happens, the hosel gets exposed.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm trying to do what you're telling me to do, but I'm hitting it on the hosel. Oftentimes it's just this little nuance that you're letting your hands move away from you a little bit, right? Whether going back or coming through.
Yeah. Yeah. Tees underneath the arms, glove, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people like towels. I think I like towels too. I think towels yeah. in the progression are probably a little bit easier. You might would start with a towel and then progress into a tee. So like just having some nice pressure, keeping that pressure between, you know, the upper arms and the mm-hmm. torso. Sure, the elbows are going, they're not going to be touching the rib cage. No.
Yeah.
But like keeping that little pressure in the arms as you're moving back and through.
Talk about, let me give you two components that we would see a little from face on. One would be weight distribution, mm-hmm. left to right. Also talk left to right, toe to heel. Like just talk where you like the weight to be in general here.
With a stock shot, about 70-30 left at impact. Okay, so then from there, how the player does that. Some players are much more comfortable going ahead and presetting that. Some players like to start a little bit more 50-50 and have a little more weight shift in the transition. And then you'll also see some players that like to move the weight forward in the backswing. I kind of like to see where impact and then kind of work my way back, because some, like I said, some, there's three options, and some of those players, you know, the guy you're standing in front of at 8 a.m. may be completely opposite of the guy that's in front of you at 10.
Yeah, I love that. I think weight shift and short game is something that has, I think, kind of grown over the last 10 years too, where maybe when I got in the business 25 years ago, it was like, hey, put your weight left and don't move it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Start left, stay left, start left, stay left, start left, stay left. And look, that applies to some, there's no doubt. But to your point, you were like saying, no, it's okay. There's some are 50-50 and okay, it might even move a little right, then back to the left, you know, and then some start left and they go harder left in the backswing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I like to start it and kind of see where they are at impact and then sort of work my way back from there to what they're comfortable with. Also a little bit of what they do in their golf swing. You know, I mean, it's still the same brain, you know, so the golfer is going to have a lot of similar signatures that they have, the way they hit a golf ball and the way they chip a golf ball. They're going to be very similar.
What about shoulder tilt? So like, do you keep it where, like in the full swing, you know, you'll see a little side bend to the right. Do you level that out at all in short game, or do you let it be?
It's definitely a little more level for sure. Yeah. I like to see from the down the line view, I like to see the shoulders, excuse me, turning, you know, pretty level or 90 to the spine. I see, you know, a lot of times, going back to Lee, so like his shoulder turn was a little bit flatter, right? So he would go this way a little bit, then that would cause the grip to go a little out. The sweet spot would swing a little behind him. That was what we did with his a little bit more of his distance wedges, 50, 60, 70, like that, was left shoulder a little bit more down in his backswing so that he was turning a little more level or square to his spine. And then it was easier for him to keep the grip more in and the club head more out, as opposed to turning flat. So yeah, to answer your question on that, I like to see nice neutral shoulder tilt. Yeah.
That helps so many when you get them in there and they feel like their spine's a touch more left, maybe even a touch open, and you know, not that doesn't mean like you're driving your pelvis way left, because sometimes, you know, they push that pelvis hard left and they're hanging, you know, then they kind of lean back with the spine. So that neutral spine just tends to help with, then you said, kind of managing the weight with it.
I agree 100%. I mean, a lot of times when people feel pressure or weight in their feet, you could have two players that feel equal pressure in their lead foot, and then one may be tilted 20 degrees to the right away from the target, and then the next player could be just the opposite. So, yeah, spine tilt and pressure are tricky. You have to be careful, like, because people, a lot of times, players are like, okay, I need to get my weight forward. And then they do it by moving their pelvis over there rather than keeping their spine more vertical and then moving, you know, top and bottom of those spines slightly. Yeah.
That's such good stuff right there. That helps so many in amateur golf. All right. I want to get to this steep versus shallow. Before we get to that, Tim, quick minute here from Lab Golf. If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. But how long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke, so you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figured out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance. And you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putting can be, head over to labgolf.com.
All right, so let me throw this video up here. This is Jordan Spieth. I would say this window might be three-ish, maybe somewhere in there. But when I look at Spieth, and obviously a wonderful pitcher of the golf ball, you know, you'll see the head move forward. Like we're talking about, the weight kind of starts to the left, then he kind of, you know, he'll kind of move the head forward a little bit more in the backswing.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, but I think the component that I want to ask about you next here is the amount of shaft lean that you that you like to see in the progression of these shots, and kind of how you view, you know, the shaft lean at address and impact.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I would say like just a standard 2D video from your phone or from V1 or something like that, you know, somewhere in the realm of 10 degrees is going to be kind of normal. As far as, you know, the third window. Now ball position plays a huge factor in shaft lean. So if the players, you know, if the player's trying to hit a low shot or a medium low shot, the ball is going to be further back. And then with that, you know, that's going to obviously create more shaft lean, or vice versa, if they're moving the ball forward, trying to hit it higher. I do like for the, and we'll say this, and this is not exactly right, but I do like for the hands to be, you can see there with Jordan how his hands are pretty much underneath the sternum, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're slightly forward. So I don't like for the player to try to achieve a lot of shaft lean purely by just dragging the grip, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I don't like for the hands to work, you know, sort of independently of the body, right? So the ball being further back, hands are, you know, kind of under his left ear, if you will, right? And let that ball position sort of dictate the loss or gain of shaft lean, as opposed to sort of playing with a similar ball position and then trying to throw it past your hands to hit it higher or lean it more to hit it lower.
Yeah. How do you view in general just the steep versus shallow debate that seems to never go away?
Yeah. Well, first off, I guess go a little further back. I think a lot of players have maybe misinterpreted, and I think maybe a little bit of coaches, we have maybe not said it well enough when we talk about divot depth. All right. So when we talk about arc depth, because, you know, the opposite, you know, we see these big divots and then we immediately think, okay, that's steep, right? Because it's a deep divot. And then we see a swing that doesn't have a deep divot. And then the opposite of deep is shallow. Yeah. So then it's shallow got kind of misused, right? Mm-hmm. And so it kind of got used one in the same with angle of attack, but also with the depth of the swing, right? Because, you know, people are like, all right, we're going to jump in the pool. We're going to jump in the deep end or the shallow end. So like when we didn't see a deep divot, everybody just started saying shallow, where the angle of attack was still potentially quite steep. The bottom of the swing, the arc depth was not, it was, and for lack of better words, we just said it's shallow. So I think my opinion on it is that arc depth is probably the most important thing there is in the short game.
Yeah.
And so I'm, if like every swing we make just slightly brushes the top of the grass, we're going to be pretty happy with our short game. Now, angle of attack, the loft we deliver, things like that, are certainly going to change the launch of the golf ball. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I'm watching players, perform around the green, the first thing I'm noticing is like, okay, how is the bottom of their swing? What do I need to change there? Is it, you know, is it too sticky? Is it too high? So I think about it a little bit more on a vertical component first about where the bottom of the swing is, and then more on a horizontal component of like, okay, the bottom of the swing's too far behind the ball, or the bottom of the swing's too far in front of the ball. So I'm looking at it vertically first and then horizontally second. And that's, I think a lot of people are saying very similar things.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit in the semantics of it.
Right. Yeah, because you could be wide going back, or, you know, a little more radial going back, but the arc depth at the bottom could be similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, I think what Joe's saying a lot, Joe Mayo, he's done a great job for the short game world. I think he's kind of labeled some things that are maybe just a little bit mislabeled, misspoken. And then, but I, like I said, I don't really think the general short game coaching population is that far off in what everybody's believing.
No,
I think it's a lot closer than everybody is really kind of, sounds sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree. Because like you do look at like a Jordan, right? Where he'll get that club head on the ground and that leading edge, you know, for all intents and purposes, it can get it, he's okay playing on that sticky side, right? Mm-hmm. And so that arc depth is different than say someone who might be a bit wider, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a different shot, obviously.
Yeah, but you can see how Cam is moving through there. Obviously, he's gonna have more extension, more right side bend. You know, his head's moving up, it's moving back. And that's fine as long as you got the right components on the front end or the backswing side of it in place. Now, obviously, what he just did there would not work very well with somebody with a wide stance with their head over their trail foot at a dress.
No. Yeah.
Right. So you got to just make sure the components all match everything up for what they're doing. But yeah, I mean, for most shots, moving the bottom of the golf swing in front of the ball is usually a good thing. Right. And then there's some lies. There's some lies where you don't necessarily need to do that.
Well, but that's just it.
We need it.
Yeah, that's just it. Like it's both sides. No one's saying move the arc back or the low point, right? Like we're not we're saying the low point can be ahead, right? It's I think isn't the debate is when that club head gets into the ground, what it does from there. Isn't that what it's really all about? Like, are you okay being sticky? Right, like mm-hmm. a Spieth, and it continues to go down, or do you want to get it out of there a little sooner?
Right, right, and that to get the club moving more up to have less divot. Yeah. If you are going to move more up and have the arc depth come up vertically, unless you have a really good lie, you need to be in front of it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. so you need that club to be descending, obviously. So you are going to need some steepness. From the angle of attack,
right, right.
You know, there are obviously some lies off of big upslopes or things like that. You know, where sitting way up on top of maybe some zoysia, where you could have some positive angle of attack. But for the most part, especially when you have tighter lies, or gross lies, it's sticky into the grain. Yeah, we need to go ahead and get in front of that golf ball, and then either A, just hit ball first and let it take a divot after, or B, if that bothers you, then you need to start making sure that the arc starts to ascend and move up. And it's usually by some extension in the body, getting the club to move up a little more. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of, and I'll go back to, I don't know, I'll just pick one here. Kind of Lee, like, you know, the body, like it, like you see, it does kind of move up. See there?
I mean,
it's there is no staying down, right?
Yeah,
there is
it's not staying down. Right. I mean, what would happen that would be problematic is like if a player starts moving up too soon.
Right.
Right. So then that's going to create, once again, the bottom of the swing is going to move. We're going to get to the bottom sooner. Let's say that. The club's going to bottom out too soon. So you wouldn't want to, you wouldn't want to pop out of it too quickly. And sometimes that's where I think some players maybe misinterpret the information, is they just try to jump up out of it too soon.
But to me, that's the crux of the debate. That's really what the discussion should be about right there is amateurs. They will try to get out of it too soon. They will try to get the club head out of it too soon because it's sticky, right? Mm-hmm. And they fear that stickiness. Now, I think the debate and the discussion should be more about that, the arc depth, right? And whether the leading edge on the ground in sustaining the down well into past impact versus getting it out of the ground versus getting it out of the ground, in which one of those do we deem best for the amateur golfer in general? I know everybody's different. I get it. And I know tour players are as they're, you almost got to take them out of it for a second, because talking to the masses, that to me is the real discussion, not whether or not you're, steeper, wider or steeper going back. It's more about that arc depth, the stickiness, the leading edge on the ground. how is that being discussed to the 12 handicap and building a short game?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the most problematic thing you could do for your short game is to lower the arc depth too much.
Right.
Right. So if the depth gets too low, one, we know we're going to see a big divot. Two, we're going to start touching ground too soon. Mm. Right. And so then, so when the player, and it's usually by the knees flexing too much. Right. So increasing that flex too much, that's usually when the bottom of the swing gets in the dirt too soon. Yeah. And then the players start doing all types of things. However they respond to that, you never know. They're going to figure out some way to try to get the club out of the ground. What I see a lot is players start to right side bend a lot. Or flip it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So now we've got an arc depth that's too low, too deep, and then it's touching the ground way too soon, and it's now we're in serious trouble.
You're in trouble. All right. Let's transition here to one of your players. We're going to look at one more swing here, and then we're going to talk about Aimpoint to finish off the show. So this little segment here, Tim, we call. So this young man. Mm-hmm. Now this is the before, right? This one here.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are, like, not saying this couldn't work, but you would need to line up right of the target considerably. Okay. His biggest problem is he would get the club face a little bit shut. And so he would get some, you know, once again, he's the left wrist would get a little flexed, bowed, whatever you want to call it. Right. And then he would lose loft, and he would start trying to, you know, he'd start kind of trying to pull it back and kind of stick the face in the sand too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then this one.
Yeah, so here you can see this ball is taken off much higher. So that mm-hmm. was the thing we were really working on in this lesson, was to get him more loft, okay. so that his depth in his bunker shots was just too deep, right? There was way too much sand between the club face and the ball, and then so obviously ball speed was really slow, and then so he would hit a lot of shots short, and then the ball wouldn't spin when it did land, right? So he's hitting kind of a lot of knuckleballs. Right. Mm-hmm. So we were working on him here, trying to get more loft. Right. And you can still see some of the similar pattern. Right. Mm-hmm. He's got plenty of steepness in his swing. It's just we were trying to use a little bit more trail edge going through the sand, definitely more loft. Mm-hmm. And then minimizing. You have to be careful. This you can't do too much of this, but we were trying to minimize some of the sand between the club face and the ball.
Yeah.
Right. So he could get more spin. And he wouldn't have to swing so hard to make the golf ball fly, you know, 10 yards, 12 yards, however far you're trying, 15 yards, right?
How do you, when you evaluate your greenside bunker technique, right? Like just kind of like a stock shot to a 10 handicap or something, has it changed over the years? Like you've been teaching golf for a long time. Do you feel like you're pretty much where you were, say, 20 years ago, or has it evolved a little?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think, allowing the player to be a little more flexible in what they do well has definitely changed. Not trying to be as, you know, this is the one way to do it. Going back to those five pieces, you know, I'm certainly trying to get the player to have a lot of loft, right? So I think a lot of times players don't have enough loft, especially higher handicap players. And then when they don't have enough loft, the club is going to stick in the sand more.
Yeah.
They're going to get more sand between the club and the ball. When they do hit it solid, it comes out too low and too fast, right? When they have like a good strike that they're really looking for, it just comes out too fast. So I'm always assessing how much loft and then where the club's entering the sand. Those are probably the first two things I look at. I like, you know, and then from there kind of polish and coordinate everything around that. So, you know, spine's obviously very important. The flex in the legs, extremely important. We were talking about that earlier. You know, the deep arc depth, the one time that it is a good thing is when we have a buried lie in the bunker, right? So like that's one of the times when, you know, a lot of flex in the legs is advantageous. It's a good thing because it's paramount that we keep the club in the ground for those shots, as opposed to chipping on grainy Bermuda that's growing straight into you.
Is there a way that you kind of teach that stability in the legs at all? The lower body, is any tricks there?
Yeah, I mean, certainly just from first is like just literally letting the player know the concept. It's like, look, we want to keep this lead leg flexed. If they have a hard time with it, one thing you can do is like actually have the ball where it's in the bunker, but their feet are out of the bunker. That's a very difficult, that's a really hard shot on the spectrum, but that forces them. They're like, if they pop up at all there, they literally could miss the golf ball.
Right.
So if you have a bunker with just a small lip where it's only a few inches below their feet and make them hit shots with the ball in the bunker, out of the bunker, that really will help them maintain that flex.
Yeah. You can't shy away from, we have a lot of teachers that listen to the podcast. You can't shy away from greenside bunkers, man. You got to get in there with your students and you have to teach them how to hit those shots. You got to get them better, at least, you know, capable of getting out of the greenside bunker. That's the one thing I miss, you know, being in here, is I'm not able to do that, obviously, with, you know, no sand. I'm working on trying to turn the studio into like a TGL studio, right? Where I get real sand and like I can knock the wall down and I have a moving green and all that too. So maybe if I like sell a few more lessons, I could turn the studio into that. But you got to get, you know, you got to teach them how to hit the driver, and you've got to be able to get in there and address the greenside bunker so they can get out. And so those are just, you know, two shots that you gotta be able to do, you know, and move the needle with students.
Yeah. And the biggest thing with greenside bunkers is why I like to help players have enough loft, maybe almost too much loft at sometimes, is because they don't want to swing hard, right? It's like they're afraid they're going to hit it across the green. So they're hesitant to really give it that thump or that splash that you hear tour players or just good. It doesn't have to be a tour player, but just good bunker players. Like, we know that sound, right? Yeah. We all hear that sound, and it's hard to make that sound when you swing slow, and it's hard to make that sound with a shut face. Yeah. So I really try to get the player with some loft so they can give some speed.
All right, let's finish with this. You teach a lot of putting as well. And aim point golf, it came about. I can remember when aim point started. I was working at Golf Channel at the time, and I was doing morning drive 2 days a week. And so it came out, and I knew Mark Sweeney and what he was doing. And I went through actually all the initial stuff when we had the books, you know, we did all stuff off the books. And so I remember we did a couple of segments, and it was me and Gary Williams and Damon Hack. And like, they were like, so what do you think? Do you think this is, you know, do you think this is, has lasting power? Do you think this has an impact? I'm like, yeah, I do. I think this is an underrated part of the game. I think it's been underserved up to this point on how to read a green, really get into the factors that actually affect the ball breaking and being able to quantify that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I said, I think the numbers make sense. It's, and now, you know, whether Aimpoint Express and all that has validity and players are going to buy into that, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I think at the core and the substance, the information's right, and it's going to make a huge impact on the game. And it has. There's no doubt. Now, the numbers might not bear it out overall on average, say on the PGA Tour, but I can name at least a dozen that would sit here and tell you that it's helped their putting, right? And I don't think they're not going to blow smoke. I mean, Colin Morikawa is not going to blow smoke and say Aimpoint has really helped my putting if he didn't believe that, right? And so it has helped some. There's no doubt. But we're at a point now where it almost feels like Aimpoint's being blamed for slow play. You know, it's like these guys are doing Aimpoint and that's why they're slow. What's your take on that? And that is Aimpoint the reason why PGA Tour players in full field can't get around in less than five and a half hours?
The short answer would be no. I mean, I don't think Aimpoint's to blame at all. I'm like you, Mark came to Old Waverly in 2009. Yeah, so I mean, early on, right, where we were using fall lines and the books, and the accuracy of the reads was amazing, right? But one thing he saw was like, he was like, we got to speed this up. right? Mm-hmm. And so then Aimpoint Express came out after the midpoint reads. So then Aimpoint Express came out, and the accuracy was still very high. And the whole point was to get the reads faster. I've got some players who use Aimpoint who are not slow at all. And then I have, you know, then there's some players that are slow. I think the players have a tendency to mess it up, to slow it down. If you know what you're doing, I mean, you can do most of the read before it's your turn to putt. And then when it is right. your turn, it's relatively quick, actually. Yeah. I think sometimes we try to be too precise and we're like, is this a 1 or a 1.5? And then we feel it too many times, maybe with our feet. And then also it's like, we just start too late. It's like, yeah. okay, so now it's your turn to putt. And now you start walking back and forth to the hole, around the hole. And then, so ultimately I think it's the human side that's kind of given Aimpoint a bad rap. Are there players that use Aimpoint and they're slow? Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think it's Aimpoint's fault that's happening.
I think there's guys that are slow that don't use Aimpoint. You know,
and
I think
it's that's a fact.
Yeah, and I think your points are valid. I mean, until you start holding the player accountable, mm-hmm. none of this goes away. You know, and for whatever reason, the PGA Tour is afraid to hold the player accountable. You know, and how fast or how slow they play the game. And until you hold the player accountable, none of this will change. I mean, your slow players are going to gravitate to being slow. It's just the way that they are, and your faster players will gravitate to be fast. Now, if you deem like, hey, this is too slow, we need to pick this up, which I think they need to pick it up. You know, I mean, the world's moving fast. You're taking too long over a shot. You nip that person one stroke. You know what they're going to do? They're going to start speeding up. You know, they're going to start speeding up. So just have some accountability for the player. Don't blame Aimpoint. Don't blame. Okay, now we're going to test these, you know, the guns on how far they are. Like, no, really? I mean, just come on. It's not a device. It's the player. If the player let the player do what they want to do, but if it's too slow, nip them.
Yeah. You know, everybody complains about slow play, right? So if everybody complains about slow play, play should get faster. But it's really like everybody just wants everybody else to play faster.
They just
want everybody else so they can play play their pace. Yeah. They just want everybody else to go faster. But you're right. I mean, like stroke, like, I mean, it's a lot. That's somebody's livelihood. It's their career. So when you start piling on strokes, I mean, that is a big penalty. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they'd probably rather pay fines than strokes. Because it doesn't have quite as much effect. But I mean, I think the process is still fine as far as using Aimpoint. It's just the player has to maybe get in it a little sooner and not wait until, okay, now it's my turn to putt. Now I go through my whole process. Yeah.
I tell you, TGL is refreshing in that way, that shot clock. It is. It's,
yeah.
There is something very nice. That's a better word for that. There's something very appealing to watching TGL in the pace in which they're playing. And it's like they, you know, the teams of three, right? Like, okay, he hits a drive and then the other team hits a drive and then it's the next, then it's, you know, they have to alternate shot with three guys. And just the crispness of that and the next player, like, you know, it just has a tempo to it and a movement to it. And I think it just hits, you know, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And I don't think you're ever going to get to that pace in 18 hole round of golf on grass and moving around with elements and things like that, but they can pick it up. There's no doubt. I don't want people to get one shot penalties, but at the same time, I don't want my team to get pass interference for 15 yards. You know, like I don't want those things to happen, you know, penalties to occur. It's part of sports. And I think the tour needs to hit this head on. It's not a system's fault. It's not this fault. It's the player's fault. And start holding them accountable. And I think if they did, I think the majority of players would welcome that. And they would, you know, of course, there's always going to be a little friction from a certain set of players, whatever. No matter what you do, you're always going to get that. But start governing and holding people accountable, because if you don't, it's just too gray. It's too wishy-washy. It's this, it's that. It's, there's so many excuses. It's like, no, it's the player's fault.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think everybody wants pace of play to improve, especially and starting with the players. I think everybody wants it to be faster. The viewers want it to be faster. The tour wants it to be faster. So, like I said, I mean, it's just it's coming up with a system of regulations and you know, like just having you know this if this happens, then this is going to be the result, and then just forcing players and officials to stick to it. I do think everybody wants to play faster, and I do think some people use aim point poorly. But like you said, I think there's also some players that are slow that don't use aim point. So I think aim point is maybe being just kind of thrown under the bus a little bit for that.
Yeah, it is. All right, Tim Yelverton, thank you so much. Go follow him on Instagram. You have a website, Tim?
Just oldwaverly.com is
Old
is
Waverly.
The
okay.
Yeah,
Old
and Waverly. Then most everything is just at Tim Yelverton Short Game on Instagram.
Okay. On Instagram. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's a great follow. This is awesome, man. I appreciate it. I'll see you in a few weeks, Players Championship.
We'll
I always
there.
Do a little thing Tuesday night for the teachers, so I'll send it to you if you can sneak over to the studio. I'm only about 10 miles, or not even that, probably like 7 miles.
Okay, awesome.
All right.
Thanks, Travis. Thanks for having me.